Welcome to this deep dive. Today, we're going beyond the usual Cinco de Mayo story. We want to uncover its real history and, well, why it matters so much, especially its surprising origins right here in the U.S., particularly California.
Yeah, that's right. And for this exploration, we're leaning heavily on David Hayes Bautista's work, El Cinco de Mayo. It's a really solid academic piece that gives us a much, much deeper picture than, you know, the usual party narrative.
Exactly. So our goal for you today is to kind of reveal some unexpected truths behind the holiday and really understand its deep connection to the Latino experience in the States, with California playing this really central role. Okay, so let's unpack this. Where should we start, maybe looking at the Latino community in California before the Civil War?
Good place to start. So after the Treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo in 1848, California already had this, well, substantial and pretty diverse Latino population. You have the Californios, right? People with deep roots, but also a growing number of immigrants coming in from all over Latin America.
And the gold rush must have just poured gasoline on that fire, population-wise.
Oh, absolutely. It accelerated everything. But, and this is key, it wasn't a simple story of growth. This community faced some serious headwinds integrating into this rapidly changing California.
Headwinds like what? What kind of challenges are we talking about?
Well, they were often marginalized, you know, treated as outsiders. Even the Californios who'd been there for generations, and this wasn't just like bad feelings, it had real impacts. Land disputes were huge.
Right, people just showing up and claiming land.
Yeah, exactly. Squatters, miners making claims based on totally unfamiliar U.S. laws. Imagine having your family's land suddenly under dispute, and then there were the property taxes.
Ah, a new system under U.S. rule.
Precisely. A big burden, especially for the California cattle ranchers down south. Sometimes they had to sell off land just to cover the taxes. It was a tough situation.
Okay, so it sounds like they really needed a way to, you know, push back, to voice their concerns.
They did. And the Spanish language press became absolutely vital. Newspapers like El Clamor Público, its editor, Francisco Ramirez, was a key figure.
What did they do? Just report the news?
Oh, much more than that. They actively took on the injustices, arguing for dignity, for rights. Get this, Ramirez even translated the Declaration of Independence into Spanish.
Wow. To sort of highlight those universal principles.
Exactly. Saying, hey, these ideals of liberty, they apply to us too. It was a powerful statement.
So beyond the press, were people starting to organize?
Yeah.
To come together?
Yes. You start seeing the beginnings of that. Early forms of organization, sometimes called juntas, little committees or assemblies. And you also see terms like Hispano-Americanos and Raza Latina being used more.
Trying to forge a shared identity.
Pretty much. It was about finding common ground among this diverse group, united by language and culture, especially when they were being treated like, you know, second-class citizens. It was moving from individual struggles toward a collective voice.
Okay, so we have this picture. A vibrant community, but definitely facing increasing pressure. Now let's throw in these two massive events, the American Civil War and the French intervention in Mexico. How on earth did those become connected for Latinos in California?
Right, this is where it gets really fascinating. These two conflicts, seemingly separate, became deeply intertwined in their minds. The French intervention in Mexico, and specifically the Battle of Puebla on May 5th, 1862, that became huge.
The battle that Cinco de Mayo actually commemorates.
That's the one. News of that Mexican victory, this smaller, kind of scrappy Mexican force defeating the powerful French army, it traveled all the way to California and just resonated incredibly strongly.
And presumably those Spanish language papers we mentioned played a big role in spreading that news.
Absolutely critical. Papers like La Voz de Mexico and El Eco de Pacifico were the conduits. Think about how that news traveled.
Yeah, how'd it get there? No internet back then.
Right. It went from Puebla to Mexico City, then overland, probably horseback or carriage, down to Acapulco on the coast. And then finally, by steamship, all the way up to San Francisco.
Weeks later, probably. Imagine the anticipation.
Exactly. Waiting for that ship to come in with news from home or news affecting people like them. And when the news of the Puebla victory arrived, well.
The reaction must have been something else. Yeah. Here's this, like, David and Goliath victory for a Latin American nation against a European empire, right when Latinos in California are feeling pressured themselves.
It was immediate and overwhelmingly enthusiastic. It became this potent symbol, you know, resistance against foreign interference, yes, but also just immense pride. It wasn't just a military thing. It was cultural, symbolic. It spoke directly to their own experience.
Okay, so this excitement, this pride, it didn't just stop at cheering, did it? It led to actual organization, these Juntas Patrióticas Mexicanas. Tell us about those.
Yeah, the juntas. Following that news from Puebla, these Mexican patriotic assemblies, basically local organizing committees, just popped up all over California, and even into parts of Nevada, Oregon, too.
So a real grassroots movement.
Totally grassroots and widespread. Hayes Bautista's research is incredible here. He identified nearly 14,000 individuals listed as contributors or members of these juntas.
14,000. That's a huge number for that time. It really shows how deeply this resonated.
It really does. It wasn't just a few leaders. It was a broad community effort.
So what was their main goal? What were these 14,000 people trying to do?
Primarily, their goal was practical. Support Mexico against the French. They organized events, collected donations, money, supplies, whatever they could manage, held meetings to share news, build solidarity, basically rally support for the cause back in Mexico.
And the Cinco de Mayo celebration itself became part of that effort.
Absolutely central. It wasn't just a pre-existing holiday they adopted. The commemoration of Cinco de Mayo became the key public event for these juntas. It was how they built unity, how they created this shared public memory around the victory.
So the holiday as we know it, or at least its origins, were really forged right there in California out of this specific context. It was a local response connecting to a global event.
Precisely. The first sort of official commemoration we know of was in Los Angeles in 1863, marking the first anniversary.
Yeah.
It wasn't just remembering a battle. It was about actively building their community, their shared identity in California.
And that symbolism, the smaller democratic force against the big imperial power that must have hit home.
Oh, absolutely. It lined up perfectly with the values many held. And crucially, it mirrored their anxieties about the Confederacy during the Civil War.
And so?
Well, many Latinos saw the Confederacy as pro-slavery, obviously, but also potentially expansionist. There were real fears the Confederacy, if successful, might try to expand into Mexico, maybe even ally with the French. So resisting the French in Mexico felt connected to resisting the Confederacy in the U.S.
Wow. So that Puebla victory wasn't just abstract. It felt relevant to their own immediate fears and hopes. Right there in California.
Exactly. It wasn't just about Mexico. It reflected their stakes in the American conflict, too.
This really paints a different picture of Cinco de Mayo's beginnings. Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned practical support. One really interesting example is the Sword of Honor for General Zaragoza, the hero of Puebla.
Yes. This is such a fascinating detail. The newspaper La Voz de Mexico actually spearheaded this initiative. They basically said, let's honor General Zaragoza, and launched a public subscription to pay for a ceremonial sword.
Like a 19th century crowdfunding campaign.
Kind of. And it wasn't just symbolic. They commissioned a well-known San Francisco jeweler, Tucker & Company, to make this elaborate sword. It was apparently quite beautiful, and they even displayed it publicly before sending it off.
Showing the community's collective investment in this.
Exactly. A real tangible symbol of their support and pride. But then, tragically, Zaragoza died not long after the battle.
Oh, no. Not in battle.
No, from typhoid fever, sadly. Just months after his great victory. And this news, of course, hit the community hard. He was genuinely seen as a hero, a defender of democracy.
How did they process that loss?
Well, there was this really powerful piece published in La Voz de México by Francisco Herrera titled Zaragoza No Ha Muerto, Zaragoza Is Not Dead. The argument was basically that while the man was gone, the ideals he fought for democracy, resistance to tyranny, those lived on.
So his inspiration continued.
Yes. He became this enduring symbol, not just for Mexico, but for Latinos in California connecting their struggles.
And the sword, did it still get sent?
It did. After being displayed, it was sent down to Mexico and eventually presented to another respected liberal general, Juan Alvarez. He understood the significance of this gift coming from the community up in California, people with ties to Mexico showing solidarity. It was a powerful link across borders.
It's clear this whole situation, the French intervention in Puebla, really lit a fire under the Latino community in California. Let's loop back more explicitly to the American Civil War happening simultaneously. You mentioned the connections.
Right. If we look at the bigger picture, for many Latinos in California, supporting the Union cause felt like the natural extension of opposing the French intervention and, by extension, the Confederacy.
Why the Confederacy specifically?
Well, as I mentioned, the Confederacy was seen as pro-slavery, which was abhorrent to many who valued liberty and equality, ideas they were also championing in relation to Mexico. Plus, there was that strategic fear a Confederate victory might embolden French ambitions or even lead to Confederate expansion southward. So the Union cause and the Mexican cause seemed aligned against common enemies, empire and slavery.
So it wasn't just about picking a side in the U.S. conflict. It was tied into these broader principles, these bigger fears and hopes for democracy in the whole region.
Exactly. And this wasn't just passive support. Latinos in California actively participated.
We talked about the juntas raising money, but what about military service?
Yes, that too. Some served in California state militias. There's even one unit in Marysville called the Zaragoza Guard, named directly after the general.
Wow, a direct link.
A very direct link. And others enlisted directly into the Union Army itself. Now, it's important not to oversimplify.
Meaning not everyone felt the same way.
Right. The Latino community wasn't monolithic. There were some, including prominent Californios like Ignacio Sepulveda, who actually sympathized with the Confederacy, or at least were wary of the Union cause or the liberal cause in Mexico. So there was definitely a spectrum of views.
Okay, that's a crucial nuance. Like any community, there's complexity. But the prevailing sentiment based on the juntas and these actions seemed to lean heavily towards the Union.
That seems fair to say. And you see it in their political engagement, too. They actively participated in elections, strongly supported Lincoln's re-election campaign, turned out for political rallies, torchlight parades.
Showing they saw themselves as part of the American political process.
Absolutely. As stakeholders in the future of the United States and connecting that future to the fate of democracy in Mexico.
This really deepens the story. So let's talk about how Cinco de Mayo itself evolved. It starts with this very specific context, Puebla, the juntas, the Civil War link. But it seems like it took on a broader meaning, especially in California.
It really did. Over time, particularly in California, the Cinco de Mayo celebration grew beyond just commemorating that one battle or even just supporting Mexico. It started to become a broader platform for celebrating freedom, democracy, and significantly Latino identity within the United States.
So less about just Mexico and more about being Latino in America.
Kind of, yeah. It became a way to articulate their values, their heritage, but also their place and their aspirations within American society. It connected their past struggles, their Mexican heritage, with their present reality in the U.S.
And do we see that reflected in how they celebrated?
Yes. Interestingly, reports from later 19th century celebrations often mention American flags and flags of other Latin American republics being flown right alongside the Mexican flag.
Ah, suggesting that broader sense of shared democratic ideals and belonging.
Exactly. It underscores that expanded meaning. Now, the holiday obviously continued to evolve through the 20th century and into the 21st, but unfortunately, sometimes that original meaning, those deep California roots tied to the Civil War and democratic ideals, gets a bit lost or overshadowed in how it's often celebrated today.
Right. It becomes more of a generic party day sometimes, disconnected from that history.
Which is a shame because the real story is so much richer and more relevant, I think.
So if we were to boil it down, what's the most crucial takeaway for people listening about the origins of Cinco de Mayo in the U.S.?
I'd say the key thing is that Cinco de Mayo has these incredibly deep, significant roots right here in the 19th century Latino experience in California. It wasn't just imported. It grew here organically out of their response to huge international events like the French intervention, but also domestic crises like the Civil War and their own ongoing fight for rights and identity. It's a powerful story of, you know, local action shaped by global events.
And that its early meaning was so strongly tied to these really powerful ideals. Democracy, resisting oppression, liberty, drawing that line between the fight in Mexico and the ideals, at least, of the United States during the Civil War.
Absolutely. Which I think leaves us with a really interesting question for you, the listener, to think about.
Go on.
How does knowing this history, understanding these specific California origins tied to the Civil War and the fight against imperialism, how does that change or maybe deepen your perspective on how Cinco de Mayo is celebrated today, perhaps even in your own community?
That's a great question. It encourages us to look beyond the surface and think about the layers of history, the local connections, and how global events shape identities right where we live. Definitely something to chew on.